නමෝතස්සා භගවතෝ
I'm holding in
අරහතෝ
progress.
සම්මා සම්බුද්ධස්සා. නමෝතස්සා භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්ධස්සා. නමෝතස්සා භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්ධස්සා. Good morning, everyone. So today, actually, in our Paramatta lesson, today will be the last lecture. Because so far we have discussed almost all the aspects related to the ultimacy as mentioned or advocated in the Theravada tradition. Today we will be discussing about certain two methods that that we should keep in our mind while we explain or understand the reality according to the Theravada tradition, which is also very imperative or very important in understanding the teachings. Because when we talk about Theravada, it's one of the most conspicuous features of this tradition is that it advocates about the momentariness, the momentary existence of the realities has been clearly advocated. The momentariness of the consciousness and the mental factors and also the material clusters. So at the same time, while we explain the momentariness, in according to some Western scholars, this is a quite late development about this momentariness. But when you look into the sutras, we can find that the roots of the momentariness, the theory of momentariness, can be found in certain sutras. The rapidness of the consciousness, and also the rising and falling of the matter, and separate mental factors have been clearly advocated. So the question lays whether that momentariness is as rapid as much as explained in the Theravada tradition. That is something to be investigated in the academic level, but traditionally we advocate that it has been explained by the Buddha himself, and also Venerable Nagasena in his Milinda Panya has mentioned the quickness or the short-livedness of the citta consciousness. So then when we look into this, now the ultimacy is what really exists. I think we have driven that chart many times, that about the ultimacy part and also the concepts, and in between there is certain realities that fall in between the ultimacy and the concept. And then also we discussed about the laws and the realities, the difference between the laws and the reality, Dhamma and Dhammata. And then today we are going to discuss about how two ways of looking into this ultimacy, ekatta naya and nanatta naya, which is utterly important, something that we cannot ignore while we try to understand the Theravada teachings, something that we should not ignore actually. So the today's lecture would be about nanatta naya and ekatta naya. Nanatta naya and ekatta naya. So naya is normally a method, but in this sense we just focus on this theory only, on the nanatta and ekatta. Nanatta means the variousness of the realities. It means two realities are completely different from each other, they are not the same. So if you take for consideration two consciousness are never the same. For instance, if you talk about the Upanishad, we have a one consciousness that remains throughout the entire life, and also it is connected to a mother soul. We call it the Atman rather than calling it the consciousness. I beg your pardon, it's called the Atman that remains in this life, that remains constant, which doesn't change. It's like a person in a vehicle. The person may change the certain vehicles like that, the Atman would transmigrate from life to life, from body to body. And that Atman is connected, it has derived from the mother soul, which is a universal soul. So likewise, in some traditions, they advocated about Atman, and some mentioned that the consciousness would remain a constant, permanent, as a one reality, maybe throughout the entire life or throughout the entire samsara. But in Buddhism, we advocate about a generation of consciousnesses, not a one consciousness. I would use the word consciousnesses, because even Bodhi has used that, but normally in English we don't use it as in a plural sense, because in Buddhism
which is a special philosophy. It advocates about various consciousness. So we would use the word consciousnesses. So it's a generation of consciousnesses. So it's not one consciousness that remains in through the entire life. For instance, if you look into a sound and look into a hear a sound and then look at a certain visible object, both the actions or the knowings have been done by two different consciousness, not the same consciousness. While we see an object, the eye consciousness arises. While we listen to an object, the ear consciousness arises. While we think about them, consciousness following the eye consciousness and also the consciousness following the ear consciousness. So they are completely different elements in terms of the ultimate realities. They are not the same. So therefore, that's why Theravadins advocate about momentariness of the realities. Momentariness means one reality has a very short lifespan, and then as soon as it passes away, another new reality arises, and it also passes away immediately after its existence. In that sense, consciousness has a shorter lifespan than the matter, the material stuff. The materials have, according to the tradition, 17 times longer, its lifespan is 17 times longer than that of a consciousness. And according to the ancient commentaries, it is 16 and one third of consciousness. And then according to the Mulatika, it is 16 consciousness. So there are some arguments about this rapidness. But all, according to the Theravadins, unanimously accepted that consciousness is arises and passes away faster than the rupa. Its lifespan is shorter than that of the rupa. So now when we look into this verity of the realities, we find two main aspects. When we talk about the nanatana, yeah? Nana means various, nanatana the variousness we can call, variousness of these realities. It means they are not the same, that's what we want to emphasize. So there are two ways that we can judge the variousness of two realities. Intrinsic nature. In terms of intrinsic nature, we think about consciousness and the if we think about the consciousness and the matter, or the mentality and matter. Mentality always focuses on a certain object, cognizes the object, while the matter doesn't have such an attribute. It is not aware of a certain thing. It's just the material quality, the hardness. Patavi is just hardness, but consciousness is aware of a certain object. We call it knowing an object, knowing an aramana gahana, we call it. Knowing an aramana, being aware of an aramana. So likewise, consciousness and matter, or the mentalities and matter, are completely two different elements in terms of their intrinsic nature. So therefore, when we look into the intrinsic nature, we can find nama and rupa are completely two different entities. Nama is different from rupa. They are not the same. Right, they are not the same. They have two different attributes. Then we look into the, now we also know that the nama arises in clusters, also the rupa arises, so as the rupas arise in clusters. Even though they arise in the same cluster, different mental elements possess different intrinsic natures, characteristics. For instance, the consciousness has the attribute of knowing an object, delimiting the object from others and focusing on it. At the same time, the contact makes it touches the object in a mental manner. Feeling tastes the flavor of the object. Perception recognizes the object. So recognizing and focusing are two different things. So likewise, even within one mental cluster, even within one mental cluster, elements, realities such as consciousness and mental factors possess different attributes, different intrinsic qualities. And also they have different functions, various functions. So in terms of the intrinsic nature and functions, we can say intrinsic nature, intrinsic function. So in that manner, in that sense, when we take about two chetasikas, two different chetasikas, for instance, chetasikas mentalities, we call mentalities. So we have one consciousness plus 52 chetasikas. They are different from each other. They're different from each other, even though they arise in the same cluster. Now, for instance, if you take the eye consciousness, arises together with seven mentalities, seven mental chetasikas. So altogether, there are eight mentalities. So they all possess their unique intrinsic qualities. So they are different from each other. So in Vipassana meditation, what we have to do is focus on these different realities as different elements. So then we find out that there is no one self or one person or one entity that should be recognized as I. It's a functioning, a collective function of various elements that possess different intrinsic natures and perform different functions. So that's the actually, that is also the basic philosophy behind the doctrine of khandas, the aggregates. When we start to contemplate about the aggregates, that there are five aggregates and the person is a collection of five aggregates, we get the idea that it's not a one thing. Because to our understanding, there are no two eyes. Eyes means capital I, not the EYE. There are no two eyes in our life. There's only one eye. We would never say I who was in the past is completely different from the person who am I today. We may say we have drastically changed our behaviors and appearances, becoming fatter or thinner or fairer or intelligent, but thing is, always we know that there is some similar element within this entire life that made us to say that that was my childhood, and that was my 20s, that was my 30s, that was my primehood. So the reason is we recognize a person throughout this entire life. But when we contemplate the life in terms of aggregates, we lose this recognition, and we get into the understanding that it is a collection of realities, not a one thing. It's a collection of realities. So what we are supposed to do in Vipassana meditation, the first stage of Vipassana meditation, in the latter stages we have to do the contemplation of anicca, dukkha and anatta. In the first stages we have to recognize that these elements separately. Some may be able to do it in a very subtle manner, but at least we should be able to recognize nama and rupa separately. And also we should know, it's better to know that the mental clusters have different elements which have different intrinsic qualities. And also within a rupa kalapa, if you take eight rupas, the avinibhogas, for an example, are different from each other. They are different in the sense, because now intrinsic nature, the patavi is hardness. Hardness is the quality that doesn't allow another material thing to go through it, or the which becomes the surface to for another thing to rest upon. And cohesion is the apo, which sticks all the material stuff at one location, or which combines two rupa kalapas with each other. And also the tejo, the heat or the coldness. Then the vayo, the bolting or the pushing nature. They have completely different attributes within themselves. So they are different from each other. So even within a one mental cluster or a one material cluster, the realities are different. In terms of what? In terms of the intrinsic nature and in terms of their intrinsic function. That is the first way to understand the variousness, nanatta, of realities. Then the second aspect to understand the variousness is the various arisings. Various arisings. Now in the first place we discussed about realities in terms of their unique intrinsic natures. Realities possess their own intrinsic nature. But now, think about two consciousness. According to Buddhism, consciousness is not constant throughout the entire life. One consciousness, now, in some doctrines, consciousness would be like this. Consciousness would be like this, one constant thing, if this is taken as a time. But in Buddhism, especially in the Theravada tradition, in all the traditions I would call, almost all the traditions, the consciousness arises and passes away. It happens like this. So this consciousness is completely different from this, the second one. It's a generation. It's not one thing. But we feel, in our life, day-to-day life, we feel like this. We never think that I woke up with a different consciousness and I'm eating with a different consciousness and listening to this with a different consciousness. With the same consciousness we are listening. That's how we feel. That is the wrong hallucination we call the vipallasa. If you translate it, hallucinations we call. But normally in hallucinations are things that are completely imagined. But according to the tradition, we translate it as hallucinations. The vipallasas, the wrong idea is that we live with the same consciousness. But according to the teachings, consciousness would rapidly change. As soon as it arises, a new consciousness arises and is followed by another consciousness. A similar type of consciousness. Similar type means in the sense of their intrinsic nature. They may not be identical. Now, this consciousness may have various attributes. Another consciousness may have, while this is joyful, while this is sorrowful, another one would be ignorant. So there can be various attributes embedded in this consciousness. But when you take the consciousness itself alone, they have the same intrinsic nature. That is focusing on an object. This experience that we get in a one mental cluster. Cluster means consciousness plus mental factors. Consciousness plus mental factors. So the experience in such a cluster may differ according to the occasion why they are mixed. The mixture is with different mental factors. Some are together with dosa, anger, while some are together with attachment. Some are together with wisdom. So we may have experienced different, we may experience different emotions within ourselves. But when we look into this, the constitution separately, in their own, we find that they all possess some similar attributes. The consciousness is always there. Consciousness always there means in every experience, we see the consciousness. For consciousness is the focus towards a certain object. So in terms of intrinsic nature, each consciousness possesses a similar intrinsic nature, but according to the tradition, even though it possesses the similar intrinsic nature, they are different elements. They are completely different realities. This is a one consciousness. This is another. So each consciousness is different from each other, not in terms of intrinsic nature or intrinsic function, because they all share the same characteristic of focusing at the object. They are different because they have various arisings. They arise one after another. So this arising of this consciousness is different from this arising. So they have arising, different arisings in terms of time. They follow one after another. So therefore, if even a reality shares, two realities share the same intrinsic nature, in terms of their arising, different arisings, they should be considered as different elements, different realities. So that is another way of looking into this. Then we take the rupa. Rupas also arise in clusters. Rupas arise in clusters. But if you think about one person, one consciousness, there's only one consciousness at a time. One consciousness at a time. But in terms of rupas, there are various rupas at the same time. Rupa kalapas, if you talk. One may appear and last for 17 mind moments and pass away. While it's still alive, another rupa may arise and pass away after 17 mind moments. So these rupas, now for instance, if you take the patavi here, hardness. All the kalapas as patavi. Patavi has the same intrinsic nature of hardness, not allowing another object to go through its space. So they share the same intrinsic nature, they share the same functions, but they are different from their arising, they have different arisings. So this patavi, for example, if you take 1, 2, 3, 4, the fourth patavi is different from the first because they arose in different times. Second patavi and first patavi are different from each other because they arose locally in different locations, in spaces. So when you think about the arising, we have to either think temporal or local. Local is in terms of space. When two rupa kalapas arise in two different locations, we have to say, even though these rupas possess similar attributes, like patavi in this kalapa is similar to the patavi in another kalapa, they arose in different locations, so they have different arisings. A rupa kalapa followed by another kalapa, they have temporal differences in their arising. Their timing is different. So likewise, even a reality possesses, two realities possess the same intrinsic nature or share the same functions. They are different from each other in terms of their arising, either temporally or locally. Now, if you think about the consciousness of two people, now one, there cannot be, according to the tradition, two consciousness at the same time. Even Western philosophers who are great thinkers based on science, some would say that there can be only one conscious experience at a time. Even they have listened to a lecture or a discussion by a philosopher, Western philosopher. He suggests that attributes of consciousness, there has to be one consciousness at a time. And also it rapidly changes. There have to be new experiences. So that's what we experience. That's what we see in our life. That's what we can experience. According to him, if something is real, if someone wants to say that something is real to for sure, that is the consciousness, because that is what we experience. You cannot say that experiencing, what we are experiencing, is false. It doesn't mean that when we think about someone as a human, the human doesn't exist in terms of ultimate realities, but the experience itself is real. So therefore, now one person has one consciousness at a time, but different people may also have consciousness at the same time. So they are different locally because they appear in different locations. And also they are related to two different mental streams. So likewise, now this is how we understand. Now the realities are different from each other in mainly two ways. Either in terms of intrinsic nature and functions, and in terms of arising. If I sum up what we have discussed so far, Nama and Rupa collectively as two groups are completely different from each other in terms of their intrinsic nature and intrinsic functioning. That is something that we have to understand in Vipassana meditation. Then even you go into the clusters, one mental cluster, within it, mentalities are different from each other because they possess different intrinsic natures and different functions. Even within one cluster of Rupa, Rupa Kalapa, Rupas share different intrinsic natures and functions. And then, two different elements, like the two consciousness which share the same intrinsic nature and the functioning, are different from each other in terms of their arising, because they arose temporally, one after another, in different times. And even the Rupas in two different Rupa Kalapas do share the same intrinsic nature, but they are different because they have different arising in different locations. So likewise, according to the tradition, all the realities, though they may possess different intrinsic nature, or they may arise in different locations, all are different from each other. They are not the same. So there is no one person who lived the entire life, who lived the entire samsara. That is a very vital factor in understanding the Vipassana meditation. That is called the Nanattanaya, the variousness of realities. That's what we normally study in Abhidhamma. That's what we are trying to understand in Vipassana practice, this variousness. Then we move into this oneness, ekattanaya. Sometimes we have to understand the teachings in terms of ekattanaya. But the actual teaching, the fundamental is the nanattanaya. Nanatta is the fundamental level. Ekatta is one way of understanding based on some characteristics. Like, for instance, various realities exist together. Various realities perform functions together. Sometimes they have a collective function. They arise together, inseparably arise and connected with each other together. And they are affected by the same karma, same cause. So likewise, even though these realities are different from each other, we can group them and call them as a one group. This is grouping the realities. It's also very vital in understanding the teachings. And also it's very useful in our Vipassana practice. But we have to keep in mind, the fundamental teachings is the nanattanaya. Realities are different from each other. That is the very basic level. But because of some other secondary attributes or functions, we may group them or club them and then consider them as a one group. So we have the oneness in the realities. Oneness. That is called ekattanaya. So that's what we are going to discuss next. So before I move into that topic, because today will be the last lecture about the paramattas, so I would also have arranged a survey like we did some time before. So there will be to get your feedback. So I think the Dr. Charit Ratnayaka is ready with the questions. So I would ask Dr. Ryan to unmute Mr. Dr. Charit Ratnayaka. So he'll give him the opportunity to talk. So he'll explain about the survey. Yeah. Just for a few minutes before we go on to the next topic.
Okay, thanks for seeing some of you have already completed the survey. That's good. We are getting the responses. Swarna, sir, did you want to quickly give everyone an update about the Rupa courses that you have mentioned?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So now we will be finishing the Paramatta course today. And then when we study the Theravada tradition, our course is actually aiming at the Vipassana teachings at the end. But to understand the Vipassana, we have to have a very basic, solid understanding about what is Rupa and what is Nama and what is causality, especially the karma and so forth. So it's a huge, long-term course that we have already started. So we have, I think we have successfully done the Paramatta lectures. So the next topic that I would be selecting is the Rupa. So I have done it in Sinhalese, and it took something about 70 lectures to complete that, the entire thing, what the Theravada tradition says. So I have decided to continue these lectures, but it may take some time. So we have divided all are done by our Institute of Theravada. So we have divided into semesters. So there will be two semesters for the year. One semester lengthening 4 months from December to end, 1st of December till the 31st of March. Then 1st of June till 30th of September. So the Rupa course would take three semesters, which the bulk is quite large. But why have we have taken such a huge bulk is that when we go into the Vipassana teachings as advocated in the Theravada tradition, as advocated by the ancient Theravada tradition, it is very necessary that we have a good understanding about this matter. So that's what the questions would make, as you mentioned, about the three courses for Rupa, 1, 2, and 3, that would run for 3 semesters. And then I'll embark on the teachings of the Nama later, and then move on to the causality and the karma then move on to the eradication of defilements, and then finally we go into the plunge into the meditation, especially the Vipassana meditation I'll be focusing mainly. If there is any time, I'll be also focusing on Samatha. It depends on the schedules that we have personally. Otherwise, this course is aiming towards the Vipassana tradition. That's what the questions mentioned about the three courses about the Rupa. And those courses will be done twice a week, Saturday and Sunday. Yeah, same time. Ekattanaya. Ekatta means oneness. Sorry. Oneness of the groups of realities. We are not talking about oneness of two realities. Oneness. So, ekatta. Now, according to Theravada tradition, we may find various types of ekatta. But today, we will be discussing briefly about few. Something about six. Bhava ekatta. Then, Chitta Santana Ekatta, Rupa Santana Ekatta, then we have Nama Rupa Santana Ekatta. Kammekatta and Kalapekatta. These are the six types of ekatta that personally I recognize in the Theravada tradition. There are a few more that we can find if we go into deep studies. So Bhavekatta means, now we take about the samsara, we can consider it as a one mind stream. But thing is, now if we take about, now, it's vital, very vital, that when we understand the teachings, mentalities and materiality arise one after another in a stream. But at the same time, we are born into different lives. We are born into different lives. So therefore, even though the stream may be considered as a one unbroken line in terms of the consciousness, Rupa would break, but we see that within a one life, starting from the Patisandhi, Chuti, death, Patisandhi, Chuti, the rebirth and the death. So within one Patisandhi and Chuti, we see a oneness. What is this oneness? Mainly, one life is a product of one karma. One karma. If we take this as one karma number one, this life is a product of the one karma. This karma produces the Patisandhi consciousness and also consciousness called Bhavanga, the life continuum, which doesn't let the mind stream to cut off. And also even the last consciousness. And some karma-born matter. The matter which is produced by karma that we will discuss in the Rupa chapter. Some material things that are produced by karma are also produced by this karma. So the karma which gave the Patisandhi is a vital factor to this entire life. When the karma which gave the Patisandhi is expired, the life may not continue. Even though there are some other karmas that could support the life, very strong karmas that could support the life or make you live long, when the power of the Patisandhi karma is finished, the entire Nama Rupa stream, so there are Vipaka mentalities, karma born matter, and also there are the Rupa that is brought by food into our bodies, by the weather conditions, and other sort of mentalities. Everything stops when the karma which gave the Patisandhi expires. So this karma is not just giving the Patisandhi, It governs the entire life. It governs the entire life. And also according to the Theravada, now the next life is produced by another karma, karma number two. The next third life is karma number three. This doesn't mean that everything in the life happens because of karma, no. But the main bloodline of this life is the karma which gave the Patisandhi. And also, according to the Theravada tradition, as explained in the Dhammasangani commentary, most of the temperaments in our lives, like angry character, attaching character, a wise person, these charita, the characteristics of a character of a person, is also greatly depending on the karma which gave the rebirth. If the karma which gave the rebirth is, now it's a kusalaka, for instance, it's a kusala karma, but it was done in a mind stream where the lobha was not fully subdued, or where the lobha was not fully suppressed, but it has a lot of wisdom, the dosa was fully suppressed. What happens is, now, when the karma was done, for instance, if we think, lobha was not suppressed, it doesn't mean the lobha was in the karma, lobha was not suppressed well. If dosa was suppressed and moha was suppressed, it says the person in the new life, that person would be very wise because the moha was suppressed while his karma was done. He would be an easygoing person, like a soft person, not hot-tempered, but he would get attached to things. Lobha is very strong. If that the lobha was suppressed well, dosa was not, moha was suppressed, that person would be attaching wise person, hot tempered. And if two were not suppressed, this detached person is hot tempered at the same time, not that much intelligent. So likewise, even though we possess very good attributes in this life, the characteristics of the next life are greatly depending, not completely, greatly depending on the nature of the Patisandhi karma. But at the same time, our habits also play a role. The habits that we have practiced. So that's why, in some life, the Bodhisatta, who could even sacrifice his body parts for the welfare of others, was acting as a robber, plunderer, or a murderer. Sometimes as a playboy in some lives. Why? Because the main reason for the characteristics in a particular life is the karma that gave the rebirth. But at the same time, habits also do play. That's why in some lives, Bodhisattva being a chief thief or a plunderer would eventually meet with a good person or meet with a certain incident and completely change himself because the habits that he has done in the past would support him to come into the better path. So therefore, the habits that we practice are vital, but the main reason, according to the commentary of Dhammasangani, the main reason for the temperaments in a certain person's life, in one life, is the nature of the karma which gave the rebirth. So therefore, the karma completely governs this nama and rupa in this very life. Completely governs. When the karma is which gave the rebirth is expired, the life would stop. At the same time, this nama and rupa in a one life, which is governed by one karma, is also given the name within the tradition as Addha Pachupanna. So all have to be taken as one thing. So this is the oneness of these nama and rupa. Why that oneness is based on the karma which gave the rebirth. It's given by one karma. So one karma is affecting all the nama and rupa in one particular life. So we can group them as one group. All the nama rupa in one life can be grouped as one thing. That is called the oneness in life. Bhave katta. Bhava means life. oneness in life, oneness of nama rupas in one life. And when we come into vipassana meditation, that is also vital, very important. When we do the kammaja rupas, there are two ways to contemplate on kammaja rupas. The most advised, the most prominent is, now if you consider about the rising and passing away of chakku pasada, the eye sensitivity, what we are supposed to do is contemplate the arising which happened in the mother's womb and the passing away of the generation of eye sensitivities at the moment of death. This is the rising and falling of eye sensitivity. So all the eye sensitivities that happen within this life, enormous amount of eye sensitivities, has to be taken as one thing, one eye sensitivity. That is how the Vipassana tradition, that's why I mentioned the Theravadians have their own way of contemplation. It's a very unique type of Vipassana practice. That's why the knowledge is vital. So that's why all the Nama and Rupa in one life are taken as one, based on the reason that they are affected by one karma. Not only produced by karma. Vipaka, some vipaka and some kammaja rupa is produced by that karma. I'm talking about affected by that karma. So the arguments is, the reasons are, when the karma is expired, the nama rupa would not sustain anymore, the generation would not sustain, and the characteristics of the temperaments of that life is greatly affected by this nama and rupa. It's very difficult to overcome that, but it is possible with the help of your past habits and also the effort. It's possible to overcome, but it's not easy. And also, when you look into the Chulla Kamma Vibhanga Sutta, Chulla Kamma Vibhanga, Chulla Kamma Vibhanga Sutta, Buddha mentions, a person who is killing other beings would have short life in samsara. How does the commentary explains about this? Now, a person's mind stream, and if he is not restrained from killing, he does the killing, even though he does a wholesome karma in this mind stream. Now, for example, this is a good kusala karma, a strong kusala karma, for example, giving lot of dana or lot of great offering to sangha or some person, a great person, kusala karma. But if he is not restrained from this killing, that his killing, this act of killing, non-restraining from killing, makes a certain defect or changes the mind, affects the mind stream. So what happens, this kusala karma is very powerful, but in terms of the lifespan, in terms of the lifespan of the life it gives, it is weakened by this killing. Because the reason is, killing affects the mind stream. So a karma that is done in such a mind stream is not possible to give a long life. At the same time, if he is not restrained from killing, he's not killing, a karma that is done, even a small karma that was done, in such a mind stream would give him a life that is with a long lifespan. That karma is not able to give him lot of luxuries because it's a small karma. But the ability of that karma to lengthen the lifespan is higher. So likewise, the karma which gives the rebirth governs the life, greatly governs the life, not completely, greatly governs the life. So all the nama rupa that are within one life has to be taken as one thing, as a one reality. It's grouping. It's not, we are not talking it as a one reality. To be true, we could group them as a one group. That is called Bhave Katta. That is the first oneness that we can find within the Theravada tradition. Then we come into Chitta Santane Katta. Chitta Santane Katta means, now the mind stream of a living being, though it is separated from life to life, as explained in the previous Bhave Katta explanation. So these are produced by Kamma, Kamma 1, Kamma 2, Kamma 3. But still, it's a one mind stream. though we separated the nama and rupa, I'm only focusing on the nama aspect here. Though we separate the nama and rupa based on life, at the same time we also have to recognize that is a one mind stream. Why do we call it one mind stream? The main reason, if a karma was done in this mind stream, regardless of the life, if it is going to give results, it is going to, now there's another mind stream of another being, for instance. Another mind stream. So this is a satta 2, this is satta 1. The karma that was done in the first mind stream is not going to affect the second mind stream. It is only going to affect the first mind stream, a consciousness in the first mind stream. Why is that? Reason is, each and every consciousness, preceding and proceeding consciousnesses, are connected with each other, connected to each other. By in terms of anantara and samanantara paccaya forces. We discussed this in the ekacche paccaya sati, sam paccaya forces. The previous consciousness supports the following consciousness. So this connection is there. So they are entirely connected. Even this consciousness, which happens after many eons, after the karma was done, is still connected. Why? Each and every consciousness supports the following consciousness. So though we are able to separate it, separate the mind stream into lives, we also need to recognize that it's a one mind stream. The reason is the consciousness are connected to each other. So that is why if a karma was done in a certain mind stream, would give result in that very particular mind stream, not in another mind stream. So that is the oneness of the mind stream. So we recognize two different beings have two different mind streams. Though each and every mind in the stream are different from each other, in terms of the generation, they are one. There's a one generation. So that is the second type of grouping. The chitta santana ekatha. Chitta santana ekatha. Then we come into the rupa santana ekatha. Rupa santana ekatha can be found in both animate and inanimate things. For example, if a seed is planted and a tree appears, after the seed is lost, but still attributes, effects of the seed can be found even in the fruits. So this entire rupa, cluster of rupa, the body of rupa, I will be discussing about them in the rupa chapter. The body of rupa, the generation of rupa, the kalapa of rupas, and separate rupas. We have to discuss about them separately. Rupa, rupa kalapa, rupa sharira, rupa santana. So this is one body of rupas. So the effects of this seed would affect, even though there is another seed, another tree close by, it's not going to affect this. That's obvious because this is how it is connected. And then, when we think, now the reason is, even though this rupa of the seed is completely gone now, still its effects can be seen. So that is one type of ekatha. And the next thing is, now for instance, if you think, now this is four great elements, according to the tradition. And we keep another thing close to this, unless if it is attached by like another tree getting attached to it. So it, like a host another tree attacking the host. But if you keep another thing, like inanimate thing, close to it. Now think about two rupa kalapas in the same body are attached to each other. So that's why it's not easy to separate, take out a rupa from the tree. But when we think in the way of our rupa kalapas, all are rupa kalapas. Here also we have rupa kalapas. But the rupa kalapas, which are close to each other of the tree and the thing, can be separated easily. But the two rupa kalapas which are close to each other, it's not easy to be separated. Why is that? This entire thing this tree acts as a one thing, as a one entity. That's why it's difficult to break the rupas, the connection of rupas of this pen. But even though I keep them very closely, it's easy to be separated. So therefore, it's oneness of the rupas are found. And in a human being also, the rupas that came into the body from the parents do affect. They, even though they have already passed away, because we after we come from after the mother's womb, there is no rupas going to come into our body from the mother. But the generation would remain. The new rupas affects all the other rupas. That's why even the utuja rupas that appear in our body are shaped according to our the parents. The main rupas, the bulk of the rupas, are coming from the food that we eat. But that rupa is also transformed according to the rupa that came to our body from our parents. So it shows that the rupas do affect this entire body of rupas, act as one thing. So that is called rupa katha, rupa santana ekatha. They have taken as a one entity, all the rupas. Then we come into a very, very interesting topic, nama rupa santana ekatha. Both nama and rupa of a certain being act as a one entity. How do we understand this? Now think about a person. This person's consciousness, chitta, and this is the rupa, right? According to the tradition that we'll be discussing in the rupa chapter, when someone wants to move the body or lift his hand, first there should be an intention. So based on the intention, a certain element of air would appear in the body and the limbs are moved. We call chitta kriya vayo dhatu. So the chitta, if you want to lift the body, lift the leg for example, chitta appears here, the vayo dhatu has to appear here and the leg will be lifted. There is a spatial gap where the chitta and where the vayo dhatu, where the movement happens. So they are not connected. But think, now there is another person standing here. When we think to lift the leg, what happens if the other person's leg is lifted? It will be a chaos, right? For example, I want to lift my hand. Instead of my hand, another person's hand is lifted. That would not happen. Why is that? This nama and rupa are interconnected of a certain being. Nama and rupa of a certain being are interconnected. When I want to move, when the intention here in this body, in this consciousness appears to move the leg, move the hand, a hand of this body would be lifted, not another body. What does it mean? This nama and rupa are connected with each other in one person. So they act as one unit. And also, now we know that when chitta appears, chitta di rupas appear all around the body. It doesn't appear in the space. It appears in a certain area of the body, like within this area of the body. It means that this is a one unit. It's not only a rupa unit, it's a combination, nama rupa santana. It's a nama rupa santana. So that's why it's also we find the oneness. We find the oneness. Then we come into another quite interesting topic, the karma katha. Kamme katha. The oneness of the karma. Oneness of the karma. Now think, someone is going to give a dana offering. Normally, when we are giving offering, now if you think about giving a dana to the Sangha, it has to be arranged many days, maybe months, that you have to think, you have to collect the money, you have to bring the stuff, do the invitation, invite your friends, arrange the logistics. So there are many things that we have to do. Now think, it may take days, but not all the time we are involved in the dana. We do eat, we use the bathroom, we wash ourselves, we do our personal stuff. We are not completely thinking about the dana all the time, right? So most of the consciousness, if it takes few days, most of the consciousness are unrelated to the dana. Are unrelated to the dana. If I draw the related are blue, unrelated are red. So there are gaps between them. But what happens if all were the giving about the dana, the blue ones, they act as a one karma. Even though there are gaps in between, they act as a one karma. If the dana was not given, none of them are able to give a rebirth. There are exceptions, cases in that. We'll discuss on this when we come to the karma chapter. Normally, we would say if the dana is not given, it doesn't become a karma pata. Then, if, for instance, if the dana is given at this moment, all are able to give a rebirth. What does it mean? They all are connected as one. The ring is there's a karma force that remains in the mind stream. It affects. Most importantly, now think about this. In terms of Dhamma, now someone is giving a dana. In between, he or she becomes regretful. What happens? The energy of this entire dana would reduce. If he gets doubt about the karma vipaka, the energy would be reduced. Now think, this doubt is related to the dana. Regret is related to dana. If this is related to the dana, right? So when we take the dana karma, we have the intentions of giving, we have a regret, a doubt, and then we overcome it, gave it, has completed the dana. What do you think? When we accumulate, when we think about the dhanamaya kusala, the act of dana, do we take these parts, these at the part of the karma? No. These are akusala. This is kusala. Akusala thought can never be the part of the karma. It can affect the karma, it reduces the power of the karma, but it's not the part of a karma. So when we think about the karma, it has to be either kusala or akusala, not mixed. Buddha mentioned in one sutta doing a white and black karma. That is about a person who does both white and good and bad karmas in one life. And when he is born in another life, he may get mixed results due to various karmas. According to the Theravadians, when we name a karma, we name it either as kusala or akusala. Even though there are some akusala's thoughts that occurred related to the karma, still they do not become the part of the karma. They are not a part of the karma. For example, if the person's mind was put down here, like it became lazy or he didn't want to do it, the entire karma becomes sasankarika. If he started with the intention to not to do, and then he thought, okay, I shall do it. Even though he is eagerly doing it later, still the entire karma becomes sasankarika. It affects the entire thing. So there's a oneness in this karma. That is called karmekatta. Karmekatta. And when the karma is completed, these all become capable of giving a rebirth. Right? So that is the karmekatta. Then kalapekatta, it's quite easy to understand. Now, mentalities arise together in clusters. They do have different intrinsic natures, intrinsic functions, but they do perform collective functions, like knowing the object collectively. When I say knowing the object, there are two types of knowing. The knowing done by the consciousness alone, which is not practically happening, the ability of a consciousness to know the object, and the collective knowing done by the mental clusters. That is what is practically happening. So knowing an object is a collective function in practical. And also collectively, when we lift an arm or do a physical or mental or verbal act, a karma, it is done as a collective function. So though they possess different intrinsic natures, they perform collective function. They have oneness in them. Rupa kalapas, they do share the same space. In a kalapa, though the rupas have different natures, they share the same space. And also, all the mental and physical, material and physical clusters, they in a one cluster, all the elements have the same arising and same passing away. It's not that we have to say they arise together. They have the same arising and same passing away. they share the same arising and same passing away. So they also manifest oneness within a cluster. That is called kalapekatta, oneness in a group, oneness in a cluster. Right? So these are the oneness that we find in the Theravada tradition. When we study the Theravada teachings, these are very vital, very important to understand. So if we just take the approach on the variousness, sometimes the doctrine cannot be fully explained. We have to have the both the approaches in order to explain the teachings. So some people ask, why the karma is giving results only to that person? Isn't it an indicator of a self? No. That is the oneness of the mind stream. Why each and every mind is connected with each other. And there is the oneness. Why this self idea comes? Greatly because of the oneness of nama rupa ekatta. Because when I want to lift my arm is lifted, not another person's arm. Why is that? The nama and rupa are interconnected. They are acting as a one unit. That is the main reason, one of the main reasons for a person to have the self view about the body and about this entire living thing. So therefore, it is very vital to understand this oneness in the doctrine. But we have to keep in mind, the very fundamental teaching is about the variousness. Realities are different from each other in terms of intrinsic nature and also in terms of their arising. But at the same time, due to acting together, due to being together, due to affected by a one cause and some other reasons, these various realities could be grouped into one club and name them as a one unit. That is called the oneness. So, ekatanaya also should be kept in mind in understanding. Yeah. So this will be the this will be the topic, and I would finish the lectures about the paramattas. That would be at the end of this course. Then, yeah. Thank you for being with us throughout this many months. I'll be starting the next chapters about rupa in December. In between, I will take few days in some time to explain how what we have studied so far. There will be about 5-6 lectures I'll be taking in. I shall announce when I would start in between how this knowledge of paramattas is applicable to sutras. Because can we verify that this knowledge of the Theravadins can be known by the direct teachings of the Buddha? And how do we understand the Theravada sutras based on the knowledge that we have so far discussed? Because it was a delicate subject, very detailed. Sometimes it's quite difficult to understand because it was a new philosophy for some. But the main core of the teachings that we, as many consider, goes into the Buddha's words itself. So can we understand this philosophy advocated by the Theravadins in the sutras? Do they contradict or do they collaborate or match with each other? So that also will be another 5-6 days. About the sutras, how to apply them into the Theravada teachings into sutras and see how do we understand, how should we understand. Yeah, so that will be the lecture, and I open the forum for the discussion.
Okay, so hello everyone. If you have any question, you can raise your hand and you can put the question in the chat box and we can help you with that. Hi Bhante, I have one question regarding the Rupa Santane Katta. So, if we think it that way, then how can we explain the situation, the transplant, because transplant is basically taking an external entity and put it in somebody else's body, and eventually that external entity is going to belong to that person as well. So, how should we explain that?
Yeah, that is also a very, very important question. So even now, when we connect it from outside, it is not considered as a part of the body. But when we do the implanting, it also happens with the food that we eat. Now, in the rupa chapter, we will be discussing the most of the rupas that are in our body are taken from outside, the food. The food is transforming into utuja. The utuja rupa of the food is transforming into the body parts. So as you said, a heart is being transplanted or kidney is being transplanted. So these things happen. So also we have to admit that according to the tradition, when it is inside the body, it is also inside the body that is considered as a part of the body. Now, for example, the undigested food is also considered as ajata, is considered as ajata, something that we have to think further. That is a very vital, very important and a valid question you raised. So far to my knowledge, what I see is when it is inside the body, they would consider it as something connected to the body. And then what happens, even the kammaja rupas, according to the tradition, kammaja rupas starts to appear there. Even the kammaja rupas starts to appear there. And this is not something new to the tradition, because when kammaja rupa starts to appear in that surface, kammaja rupa are completely different, but they start to appear in that surface. Now, for example, when we grew up, according to the tradition, this bulk of utuja rupas are taken from the outside world, like as in science, because we have to have input, so that's why our mass is increasing. So likewise, the main bulk of the utuja rupas are taken from the food inside, and that utuja rupas become a surface for kammaja rupas to happen even. So it is not clearly mentioned since when we have to consider it as a part of the body. It's not clearly mentioned since when. But when we go into the 32 body parts, the undigested food is considered as something internal. So maybe after it has been put in, there's a question like what I mentioned about the rupa santana ikatta. I would say the undigested food doesn't have this ekatta nature. It doesn't. I don't feel that ekatta nature is there. But as you said, after the heart has been transplanted, after the kidney has been transplanted, then after some time it acts as a one unit. So that is something that we also need to think further. And also I have to admit, out of the six ekattas, personally, the most difficult to explain, as you said, is the rupa ekatta. There are a lot of arguments or ways that we can think into it about this oneness. Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Padhi, Saru. And there is one question that I asked about the new classes. So do we automatically get registered for the three new classes, or do we have to register somewhere?
I shall explain it in the group. Because I have already informed to the institute about this, and they are happy to have a registration. Our executive board is happy to have a registration. I will inform you in the Viber and the WhatsApp groups about this process.
Okay, thank you, Patrick.
Most probably there will be a registration. Yeah.
I see. Please go ahead, Selene Pumya.
Okay, Vandami Bande.
Okay, hello, sir.
So, before my question, so there's another friend asked, after the class, can we get the e-certificate from the IIT?
I'll let it know to the executive board. Yeah, we'll see about it. Yeah, sure.
Regarding the Kamekata, that you said only to the dana, our mind is not always related to the dana. Sometimes we do something else, or maybe unwholesome things. So during the unwholesome time, so how can we control our mind?
Sorry, I didn't get you the word during.
During the unwholesome time.
Unwholesome.
In the asana moment.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Because for example, if we are going to arrange to the Sangha offering for next month, but we see 1 month, maybe you see 3 days, maybe I'm getting tired of that or something else. So I have a regret or some unwholesome thoughts. So during that moment, how can we adjust our mind?
Yeah, two things. One is the positive way of thinking, that always we have to think in a positive manner. That is something, that habit that we have to always use. For example, there's a nice story. And also I'll mention another advice that was given to me by a teacher when I was before our ordination. So one story in the ancient Sri Lanka was, now there was a monk who was very pious, devoted, a young monk. And he found that it is difficult for him to practice the sila. Maybe some virtues were, maybe he had strong lust or his mind was not very composed. So he was breaking some precepts, and he thought it's better to lead a lay life and practice the 5 precepts and do the merits. So he disrobed with all the respect to the sila. He disrobed not because he didn't like the monk life. He found it's quite difficult to live. Then he met a very nice lady who was also very devoted to the sasana, and they got married. And they were doing all the, they were giving dana each and every day, but they were very poor because he didn't have any proper occupation as soon as he disrobed. So then, but still they were giving the dana as much as they could. Then in the later on, he worked so hard and he earned a lot of money and he became a very rich person and who was giving lot to the Sangha. But during the early stages, they were living in a hut. So they offered some food to a monk, and monks were very happy with that because they saw how their dedication. Even being poor, they still gave every day, they gave food to the Sangha. But one monk, not that much trained and also quite old, having received this food, found that the food was not very attractive, not very nice. So what happened was, that monk in front of these people, the book says the story, he threw the food and said, who could eat this kind of food? Then what happened, that was a very rude gesture for a monk. It's a very rude gesture that you throw away the food that was offered, telling that, insulting that food. But the thing was that there was extreme positivity in that couple. So they thought, they never got angry with the monk. That is the geniusness in the spirituality. That's how a person can be judged, how much genius he is in the spiritual aspect. How they thought was, oh, these monks are so virtuous and also blessed, meritorious. They have a lot of punya. So they must be receiving a lot of tasty food. So it's true that it's difficult for them to eat. So we should try to give better food. So they worked hard to give more tastier food to the monks. And they accumulated a lot of kusala. But the monk did a very bad karma. That was his bad behavior, that throwing the food that was given by a poor devotee. That was very heartless. But from the devotee's side, they took it in a different way. They thought, this is a good opportunity for us to think about the flavor of our food and try to offer good food. Since then, they prepared very good food and they tried their best and they earned a lot and gave a lot of attention to preparing the taste, and they became so popular among the Sangha that this couple is like parents of the Sangha and giving delicious food to the Sangha, and in the end, they both end up in the divine heavens, as the story goes. It's a very nice story. So likewise, what we have to do is we always try to see positively. If a personal interview or an intimate interview was made with these two couples, the couple, they would surely say that what that monk did was wrong. That is obvious to anyone. But they didn't take it into their emotional level. Intellectually knowing that this monk is doing bad is not a problem. That is your wisdom, panya. But what happens when we take it emotionally, anger comes up. The hatred comes up. The disappointment comes up. That is akusala thought. Knowing that when a monk is not behaving properly, knowing that the inappropriate behavior is not akusala thought, it's a wisdom. Panya is acting. But if we let it come to and invade our emotional level and take control of our emotions, then it's akusala. That we have to always be aware and try to think positively. The dangers of anger, dangers of disappointment, and how this would reduce our karma and so forth, and try our best to come into that positive level. But it's not easy. Emotions would keep on coming up in the beginning. It's very difficult to suppress such an emotion, especially when you see misbehaviors of the monks that you are going to offer. That is obvious. But that's what we have to train if we want to develop our karmic aspect. But still, it won't be easy. So when I ask this question, before I ordained, I asked my meditation teacher, so this thing happens, so when we do the karma, sometimes we do regret, sometimes we get the emotional thoughts that it was a waste and so forth, how do we act on this? Then his answer was very nice. Even Bodhisatta had this thought. So it's not easy. So we have to keep in mind, it's not easy. We should not worry about it too much, because the Vesantara Bodhisatta, having given his children, when the sun came back and showing that the Jujaka is hitting them, The Bodhisattva was able to tolerate it. But when the daughter came and showed the father, because fathers are much attached to the daughters. So when she came and said, look what to whom you have given, so he has beaten us. So it said that the Bodhisattva had a thought that to take him, kill the Jujaka and take the children back. But then he suppressed it and thought, no, my dana was given. The earth shook. So it's better. It's bad of me to think in such a manner. And then he closed his eyes and then he contemplated on his dana. Jujaka came and took the children away. So there will be sort of discussion about this, the ethical part and all that we have to discuss in a different lecture about the karma. So that's how. So we have to keep in mind even bodhisattvas were struggling sometimes. So that's natural. So first thing that we have to keep in mind, that's natural. But we have to try our best to bring the positivity to the level that the Sri Lankan, the couple of the Indonesian Sri Lanka used to have. But it was a very, very high level, but still that's the level that we should be aiming at.
Okay, thank you, Pandit. So regarding the story you're giving, so can we say that offering is purified by the Dayagas, not by the monks?
Yeah, we have to say like that.
Okay, thank you so much, Pandit.
Sadhu. Thank you, Pandit. Please go ahead, brother or sister Tao Tran.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Ryan. Pandit, I have a question relating to the fifth one, which is the karma one. So when you mentioned that when we talk about karma, it's either kusala or akusala, and you gave the example of dana. So if one person has the intention to give dana at the first time, and then gives some reason, he stopped that. So he decided not to give the dana to the sangha, for example. But after that, he rethinks again and he decides to give the dana and the dana is successful. So the hesitation and intention not to give the dana and the successful of giving the dana is going to be attributed to one karma, or it's going to be a different karma, one akusala and one kusala?
It's a good question. Like, for example, he had the thought of giving the dana, right? Thought of giving. Then thought not to give, right? Then he again thought to give. Thought giving. And then gives. You're talking about this type of a karma, right? Is it? Am I correct? Yes, sister. Are you talking about this type of a karma? First thought to give,
yes.
Then not
yes.
to give, right? Then thought to give and gives, right?
Yes.
Right. So then we have to consider whether is it the same dana. For example, we had a chocolate. So wants to offer to the monk. Then thought, I would eat it myself. Maybe you had a chocolate you want to share with your siblings or parents or children, and then thought, no, I would eat it myself instead of giving. Then you know it's better for me to share, and then shares and eat. This is natural. Even among monks, we get this kind of thought, whether I eat it myself or should I share with my friends, or then sometimes, I'll eat it myself. We make all the justifications that I'm hungry or I will be sick or something, and then later on thought, no, it's better to give dana. And give. So this is very natural. This is called the sasankharika nature of the mind. So this thought of not giving, either it can be with a wholesome mind or unwholesome greedy mind, or maybe we are also considering, no, they all have a lot of things, so it's not necessary to give. So maybe it is because of consideration, or maybe it's because of greediness, or maybe because of laziness. Whatever it is, we retards from that act. And if that the same thing is given, right, we don't need to consider about this or either akusala or kusala. What happens is this entire karma becomes sasankharika. Sasankharika means prompted. Right? If this thought was not there, it would be asankharika karma, unprompted karma, which is quite sharp. which is more powerful. But this is not going to affect the duhetuka, tihetuka, two-root, three-rootness of the karma. Even sasankarika karma can give you a three-root rebirth, a perfect rebirth that facilitates you the attainments. So the sasankarika nature reduces the intensity of the karma, the strength of the karma a bit. So in such cases, now if think about the chocolate. Now you ate the chocolate and you are giving another food, then it's a new karma. It's a new karma. If the same dana was given, having retarded, then we have to consider it as a one karma, right? One karma. So these thoughts are not part of the karma. Are not part of the karma. This is the karma, kammekata. But this thought had affected the entire karma. And it became sasasankarika karma.
Yes, it's legitimate. Thank you, Fanten. Thank you, Dr. Ryan.
Okay, so.
Thank you, Fanten. Please go ahead, Dr. Anand. Mr. Ananda.
The question is, actually I have two questions.
Yeah.
The first one, again, going back to the Rupa Santana Karta.
Mm-hmm.
So when you graft a tree, a branch of a tree to another tree, so there you have the different fruits, like for example a mango branch to another mango branch. So it's not ekata there, right? Or the two branches have two different ekata, or it's not working with the entire tree?
Yeah, then in such cases, if the two branches are given two different types of fruits, should be two ekattas, right?
Mm.
But still there is a one type of ekatta because they act as one tree. Now, when we come to the Rupa chapter, we would call like within our physical body, we take as one cell. It is a one unit, and also the entire body is acting as a one unit. So one cell is different from each other. So there is an ekatta in that particular cell, and the entire body is acting as a one unit. So there is another ekatta. So when it comes to Rupa ekatta, which is very difficult to explain as I mentioned before, we find various ekattas according to the largeness of the body.
Okay. The second question on the now karma and habits.
Hmm.
So actually habits are also kind of karma, right? Because you have to have the mindful thoughts to create those habits.
Yeah, correct. Karma, habits are kammas. Hmm. Habits are kammas, in simple words.
But why did you differentiate the two?
It's also a very good thing. Now, it is true that when person is not an arahant, right, all habits, all his acts, javana acts, not each and every consciousness, all the javana acts become kamma because of the latent craving and ignorance. So habits, so we have kamma, acts, right? Kammas can also be called habits, right? Habits means the acts. In some sense, if you do it regularly, it becomes a habit. So what happens is, when we talk about in terms of a karma, this karma is producing vipaka and kammaja rupa. This is the aspect of karma. Maybe in this life or maybe in a future life. In this life, only vipaka. In future life, vipaka and kammaja rupa. And also supporting, disturbing, sometimes destructing the functions of karma. But at the same time, this particular karma itself, because we have done the karma, this karma helps the mind streams to do a similar karma. Our mind tends to do the similar karma. So the karma affects the mind stream as resulting. At the same time, the karma affects the mind streams in a habitual manner. So that's why a person who has given dana, having the habit of offering regularly, whenever he sees a poor person, the thoughts of offering comes up. That is not the kammic aspect of that act. It's the habitual aspect. So this is called kamma paccaya. This is called upanisaya paccaya. That similar type of acts, the mind tends to focus or fall into similar type of acts. And
this become intensified. That is called Asevana Paccaya. Asevana Paccaya in the Suttanta way, not in the Abhidhamma as explained in the Patthana, because Asevana is found in one stream. In Abhidhamma and mainly in Suttanta, I would call Suttanta way, Asevana can be found for in various mind streams. It become intensified. Now, person giving five danas, and the, while he gives the sixth dana, his mind is much strong in his act. It's because it has been done again and again. So, how it affects the mind stream is two ways. If it affects as a resulting, we call it Kamma Paccaya. If it affects in terms of Upanishad and Asevana, we call it habitual way. That's why I took it as two.
Okay, that's fair, Bhante. Thank you. And I have another question. Is it okay to ask?
Okay, okay.
Yeah, okay. So, for the Pratisandhi, you said, one karma is impacting one Pratisandhi, right?
Yeah.
Did you say that, Bhante?
Yeah, one karma is giving a one Pratisandhi and in the entire life, yeah.
Yeah. So, how can it actually... Now, when you say one karma, so it has to be a very, very powerful karma, right? Like basically, that decides the jati, like, whether it's a human or an animal and things like that. So, now if you want to, for example, in the next life you want to, we want to be born as a human again, for example. So, is there a way that we plan that?
The best thing is...
I mean, how can we... This thing is that, that particular one, how one can plan or think that way? Yes. Or it is just random karma?
That's it. Now, thing is, according to the life we'll be born in, the karma has to have a certain strength. Yes. Karma has to have a certain strength. It's like a karma that is strong enough to give a human birth would not give a divine birth. That is the one thing.
Mm.
So the strength has to be there. For example, if the strength is now, some kammas can give the birth, even the sixth divine realm is a very strong kamma. So in such cases, we may be able to determine to be born in a lower realm. Instead of being in the sixth realm, it's better to be born in the fourth realm if you want to meet the Bodhisatta, the Maitreya Bodhisatta. That's the realm that most of the stories say the people were aspiring to be born into because they wanted to have a discussion with the Bodhisatta himself. So therefore, if the karma is with the relevant force, we have to go into Sankhara Uppatti Sutta. Buddha mentions about he wishes to be born as a Brahmin, wishes to be born as a divine being, wishes to be born as a Kattiya or a king. It may happen if the strength of the karma is enough and the vacancy is there. For example, two people wishing to be the Sakha at the same time, it is not going to happen. Only one is going to be born there because the vacancy should be there. And if the vacancy is there, for some certain lives, then it may happen. So the best thing is, according to the tradition, you do the good kammas, but the thing is, how to judge the strength of the kamma, it is beyond our capacity, according to the Theravadins. Only the Buddha could know that. Buddha could know that how strong this... Now, for example, five people get together and kill a cow. So they have five different levels of karmas, because they have different temperament, the level of anger, the level of intense interest, all are different. So it says one may be born in the hell, one may be born in the Peta world, one may be born in the animal realm, and sometimes all may be born in the same realm. That is also possible. So now it says the Buddha had a very special knowledge called Kamma Vipaka Jnana. That is second Jnana of the Dasabala Jnanas, the 10 powers. Now, looking into such a collective act, he is able to say what is the power of each individual's karma and where their destination would be if this karma gives the rebirth. So that is one of his powers. I'm not sure whether the Agga Savakas or the great Arahants have such a power. To a certain level, they do have, to a certain level, as explained by Venerable Aniruddha in the Samyutta Nikaya, he do possess this knowledge. I don't know to which level. Then to be safe, what we have to do is to make a wish. If we want to be a human, till I attain the rebirth, the nirvana, may I be born as a human and encounter the good Dhamma, and the good friends and so forth. So that is taken by the Sankharupatti Sutra.
So Mahadev, at that time, so that is that that particular wish is the karmic impact for the next birth, or
it is it impacts it impacts the karma. I will be discussing about this, the phenomenon of wish and phenomenon of craving to the next rebirth. I will be discussing this in the Rupa chapter briefly. When it comes to the Kamma chapter, I will be giving a complete entire explanation on this, how the wish and the craving could affect the next rebirth, affect the Kamma.
Can also, a particular karma can accumulate and make one, like for example, now, for example, me, I don't know, I have a feeling that I will not go to a bad birth, because I have been always doing good things, and things are, I mean, I do bad things also, but what I'm saying is, overall, so you do so many good things, and, compassion, and, giving and stuff, so you feel like, okay, no, I can't go to a bad thing, something like that, so that kind of, strong mind sometimes can also, I think, affect the karma, right?
Sure.
I don't know. So what one particular karma can give the birth? So that's my question. I don't know how it is.
That is random, Mr. Ananda. That is random. Randomly chosen, but you can make it an effect. Like if you keep on remembering a certain particular karma, that something that you really likes, what we can do is we can keep on recalling it all the time. Then this becomes an achinna kamma, and there's a very high possibility that this would come up at the moment of death. That's what we can do. We have to always focus on the kammas that we like, that we have done, and try to recall them either daily or regularly. So there's a high possibility at the moment of death this would come up. Otherwise it would be random. Or we have an order, Garuka Kamma, Asanna Kamma, Achinna, so that order would follow.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay,
sorry. Thank you, Pante. And the next question is from Yorian is, could Pante please give one more example of the Kalapekata to distinguish with the Namarupa Antarekata?
Kalapa ekatta means within the kalapa. So if this is the kalapa, we have patavi, apo, tejo, vayo, then vanna, ganda, rasa, oja. But they do they are mixed with each other inseparably, and they appear in a one space, right? They have the same arising, same passing away. So they are taken as one cluster. They act together. They, out of the four, they cannot sustain without even a single reality. So they act as one unit. That is called kalapekatta. Same arising, same passing away, sharing the same surface. Same surface means the space. Then when we come into the chitta and chetasika, they act together. They have separate qualities with them. But collectively, they focus at an object. They do physical, mental, and verbal acts. Karmas, they accumulate karma. When to accumulate a karma, all have to come together. It's not only Chetana. Chetana is the forerunner in that karmas, doing karmas. In the mental cluster, the Chitta would be the forerunner in act of cognizing. But in doing the acts, Chetana would be the forerunner. So, but still, they act together to perform the act. So that is their oneness. And also they have the same arising, same passing away. We don't say the arising of Passa is different from the arising of Vedana. Passa and Vedana have the same arising. That is their oneness, recognized in the tradition. So this was not about the Namarupa Santanekata. Namarupa Santanekata means now Nama and Rupa, this is Nama, for example. When Nama and Rupa. So the Nama has the intention to lift the leg or hand. So when the intention comes up, Rupa arises here. So what is this link? They are locally different places. But because of this intention, Vayodhatu arises. So it means this system is interconnected. It's one system. this nama is not able to produce rupa here. No, in another body. Only produces here. So there is a link, connection between nama and rupa in one body. That is called nama rupa ekata. They are acting as a one unit. Here, rupa itself acting as a one unit in this unit. Here, in this mental cluster. In this mental cluster. So, they are different approaches. So, when I say kalapa ekata, only please focus only on the kalapa and how they act together. Only on the cluster, mental cluster, how they act together. Nama rupa ekata, we are not talking about relationship with Vijisu. This is one explanation, kalapa ekata, rupa kalapa ekata. I would have mentioned it. Rupa kalapa, kalapa ekata is twofold. Rupa kalapa ekata and nama kalapa ekata. They are different, not the same. Right? So, actually, it's better to say it's one and two separate. Nama rupa ekata is, we are talking about them combined. We cannot separate them. Because chitta santana ekata, the mind stream. Rupa santana ekata is the rupa. Nama rupa santana ekata means how they are acting together as a one unit. This is the main reason, one of the main reasons for self-view. Why is that? Our body acts according to our will, according to our wish, because they are connected. So this is very important to understand, to get rid of the self-view. Here, it's not about nama. It's a very good question. It's not about nama-rupa problem. Nama-kalapa is separately having a oneness. Rupa-kalapa has a separate oneness. They are two things. But I use the same to show that kalape katta to reduce the number. Otherwise, I would have said rupa kalape katta and nama kalape katta. I hope it was clear.
Okay, thank you, Pante. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Please go ahead, Sister Kim Wan.
Okay. Good morning. Good morning, Pante.
Good morning.
I know of three cases of heart transplant patients who took on the personality of the deceased patients or deceased who died. So one of them was a Asian boy who was needed in a heart transplant, and the heart was coming from an African American in the United States, but the boy was living in Montreal. So what was interesting is he was speaking French. But when the heart transplant was finished, he just had this tendency to only wanted to speak English. He doesn't want to study French at all. In fact, you have a choice in school to do that. And so he chose English. In addition to that, he tends to dance to rap music, which is not so French. So that's one case. The other is a woman who had a successful transplant, and she's vegetarian, but then she became a lover of hamburger. And so what had happened is, my question is, and there's another case also, in those cases, are the patients actually taking on the karma or the habits of the previous disease?
So it's another very practical, quick question, and practically something that we see. Like after the transplant, we see some special habits, right? Is it what you mean, right? That yeah. habits of the habits of the real owner of the organs, right?
Yes, that's right. Which right. Before they didn't have
process.
A life. Yeah.
So when we talk about the habits, right? So we say that character temperaments. Right? According to Dhamma, the main reason is the karma that gave the patisandhi dayaka karma. That is the main reason. And also, we do possess some physical stuff from the parents that is genetical. From the genetics, genes that we get something. So, it does affect. For example, according to tradition, It says when certain elements of the body are in balance, sometimes mind gets imbalanced. There is a certain, according to as the Iravadians recognize, a certain part of the bile gets completely out of control, out of the equilibrium. The person may get insane, becomes mad. So the rupa greatly affects the body. And the genes of the parents, sometimes we know that scientifically, certain genes and the certain neurons do affect certain mental attributes. So when genetically such things are transformed from life from parents, they do have such an effect. And also we have to keep in mind, according to the tradition, Theravadins, the consciousness also affects the body. Consciousness also affects the body. Especially heart is greatly affected by the consciousness. So then when these body parts that had genetical effects from the parents and also affected by the owner's consciousness are planted in another person's body, that rupa could affect the person's mind. It's like if this was the owner, right? Owner's karma, parents' genes do affect its rupa, and his consciousness also affects his rupa. Then what happened? Not complete now. Some parts can be affected. Then when a part of his rupa is given to another, now rupa can affect consciousness as well. Genes and karma. Karma also affects the consciousness. So it's a very complicated combination. Now, when the part of the rupa is given to another person's body, right, the second person, the receiver, that rupa, the receiver has consciousness, receiver has rupa, and receiver's karma, it affects the normal rupa, that is obvious. Now this new rupa could affect its rupa and also the consciousness. The possibility is there. So this rupa was initially affected by the owner's consciousness and owner's karma, right? Owner's genes also. So newly incoming rupa could have a great impact. This is, I'm talking about in terms of the Theravada tradition. Have a great impact to the body of the receiver and also the consciousness of the receiver. If that impact is very strong, it is possible to explain, according to the tradition, that some behavioral changes could occur. It doesn't mean that that thought is completely due to that rupa. That rupa causes the consciousness to behave. It's a very strong reason for the consciousness to have behavioral change. It is possible to happen. That is how I would explain based on the theory, rather than saying it's the karma of this person. No, this rupa, which has been already affected by the karma and the consciousness of the owner, could affect the receiver.
Thank you, Bhante. Sadhu, sadhu.
Okay, sadhu, 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 Bhante. There is one more question and one more hand, Bhante. Are you going to take them, Bhante?
Yeah, the last two then.
Oh, okay, Bhante. So the question, I think maybe the question is short. So the question is, Nama rupa, can it be called Udayapaya while doing walking meditation?
Nama rupa ekatta connected to Udayavaya meditation. Yes, we can. We have to have that, but it's now knowing the Nama rupa ekatta, we know how Nama if is connected with rupa. Nama is connected with rupa. But keep in mind, it's as the advices goes, when you focus on, now it's acting as a one unit, that is our understanding. But from the Ditti Vishuddhi level, you should be able to separate Nama and Rupa. That is vital. That is very important. We should be able to separate them. So when we do the Udevaya, we will do the Udevaya of Nama and Udevaya of Rupa separately. Don't do it together. There's a very exceptional case that some people understand the rising and falling of five aggregates together. As mentioned in Yankinchi Samudaya Dhammam Sambantam Nirodha Dhammam, that normally happens according to traditions while someone attains listening to a Dhamma talk. That is a one kind of understanding that comes up. Not that he's seeing now rising and falling of Panchupadana Kanda. So therefore, it is always advised that when you take Nama Rupa Santana Ikata, understand them. This is to understand the mechanism. We then understand and separate the elements and then see the rising and falling separately of Nama and Rupa, separately, not together.
Okay, thank you, Bante. Sadhu. Please go ahead, Sajale in Damani.
Madami Bante. I'm Sajale in Damani, Malaysia. From Malaysia, I'm in Pao Antong. So my question is, according to just now, Bante have mentioned that the Rupa can affect the receiver in spite of our own Rupa or the jinn. The Rupa from our parents also can affect our habits, some sort like that. So my question is, if someone have undergone a quite major surgical operation, so he or she need to the blood transmission of quite a much level of blood transmission, although the blood is already according is a utuja rupa, so will it also got the affection about for the receiver, maybe the mind, maybe the behavior of the receiver got a bit change, some sort like it. Because, you know, already a new blood transmission go into the whole entire body already. So this is my question. Sadhu Bante.
Yes, it can affect. It can really affect. The blood can really affect, but to a certain level. Now, for example, if you take, now the person is very mindful and very, very spiritually dedicated person. Even the blood of a very unbehaved person comes in. It may have an effect, but always keep in mind, we can overcome the effect of the Rupa if we are mindful enough, if we are strong enough. Even now, for example, a noble bean is completely given the transplant of a Putujana bean. It is not going to reduce his nobility. He's not going to fall into the Putujana level because the body parts have been implanted. So therefore, even though the Rupa does have an effect, a great effect to our mind, but we have to keep in mind that mind is always stronger than the Rupa. Mind is stronger than the Rupa. So that is why now I shall be explaining this in the future courses, like the five consciousness, eye, ear, nose, tongue, and body, they cannot overcome the effect of the five senses. If the eye is weaker, even your Arahant, the eye consciousness will be weaker. If the ear has deteriorated, the ear consciousness will not hear the sound properly. You cannot overcome that. They are weak consciousness. But why? So they are called indriyas. The five faculties are called indriyas. They completely keep the domain over their control. This domain of seeing, domain of hearing. But why? The heart base is not considered as an indriya. It does affect the mind. Heart base affects the mind. If the heart base is weak, mind becomes weaker. If the heart base is pure, the mind is more brighter. But still, if the person is very highly spiritually disciplined or dedicated or has reached higher levels, he is able to overcome this. That's why even at the very, very torturing level, physical torturing level, arahants or some beings will be able to maintain their mindfulness, maintain their spiritual qualities despite the effect of the body. So therefore, it can affect according to the tradition, and it would affect, and there are a lot of examples that it has affected, the blood has affected the mind, but we have to keep in our minds that the consciousness, the mental stuff, the spirituality is always stronger
And if we are dedicated enough, we'll be able to overcome that effect of the root.
Sadhu, Bante.
Thank you so much, Bante. Yeah, so there is no more question, Bante. But today is the last day, so may I have a few words, Bante? Sure. So we truly appreciate your dedication and your teachings, Bante. We've been gaining a lot of knowledge and experience. So, and then if during the course of the classes and the lecturing, if we have said anything or thought anything bad or inappropriate toward you, Bante, please forgive us, Bante.
And also same from my side.
Sadhu, Bante.
And thank you very much. It was a nice series, nice course, and I really enjoyed it, discussing about the aspects of Theravada tradition. I hope you all also enjoyed and gained some knowledge. And I'll be hopefully starting another course on about the how to connect this knowledge to the sutras. And I'll inform it in the Viber group and the WhatsApp group. If someone has not joined it, please join. Sayali Punyachari would help you to join there. And in that group, we would inform about the future courses. There'll be a 5 to 6, maybe 6, 7 lectures about the sutras. And then we'll move into a new course of Rupa, according to Theravada tradition, from December onwards. And thank you very much for joining. Wish you all the best. So may these merits of that we have dedicated done by doing this karma, a long course. Also, we have to explain that there was a lot of support given by a lot of devotees, especially from Dr. Ranjini Gamage and also some devotees from Kathana, Mr. Premalal and so forth, and also Mr. Bandara, who supported with all the logistics to this. And also, we have special thanks should be given to Venerable Nagita, Bante Nagita, who did a lot of dedication in filming, recording, and also editing and uploading the videos, and also Venerable Sangharatana, who did all the moderations and preparations before the classes. And also, special thanks should be given to Venerable Samathasila Bante, who facilitated us in another monastery, previous monastery in Kathana, and who gave us all the support to do the course. And also the ones who have provided with the data and also internet connections, we all recall them. And also all the devotees, devas, who supported us this course, and also our past deceased relatives, may all they enjoy this merit and find the great blissful nirvana. And also whoever joined and listened to the Dhamma talks, and myself and all the ones who supported, we wish that all of us will be able to attain the nirvana, the greatest bliss, by this great merit of studying, discussing, teaching and learning Dhamma. Sadhu. So may this merit also be a reason for the prolongation of the Buddha's discourse. Buddha sasanam chirantikatu. Buddha sasanam chirantikatu. Buddha sasanam chirantikatu. Sadhu. And also special thanks to Dr. Ryan and also Sayali Punyachari for moderating and also doing all the support that was necessary for this course. Special thanks should be given to them also. Thank you very much. I should also remind the Indonesian group for that, who provided us with the Zoom account with all the facilities, Zoom account which can facilitate 500 people. Yeah. Thank you very much for that.